Thank you for your support. Radio,
live transmission. You are listening to CFRC Radio from Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca.
In brief, Turing invented the digital computer, if anybody did. He played a major role in preventing a German invasion of Britain. And he was persecuted, arguably to death, for being gay.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Liechtenstein toasts the new year with marriage equality. China cracks down on gay erotic fiction online. And computing, the enigma of Alan Turing. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Ava Davis.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the 3 weeks ending January 11th, 2025. Liechtenstein rang in 2025 with its first legal gay and lesbian marriages. Parliament voted nearly unanimously to open civil marriage to same-gender couples last May, and the measure took effect on January 1st. Liechtenstein is home to about 40,000 people. It's bound to become a new wedding and honeymoon destination for lesbian and gay couples drawn to its picturesque alpine location between Austria and Switzerland. Queer couples can already marry in those countries and in Germany. Liechtenstein is the last German-speaking country to enact marriage equality. The fourth smallest European country is the 22nd on the continent to do so. Civil unions that do not confer the same rights as marriage have been available to same-gender couples since 2011. If a couple so desires, those unions can be converted to full marriage. Liechtenstein is a socially conservative country and only hosted its first LGBTQ pride celebration in 2022.
Lithuania's version of a no-promo homo law was struck down by the Constitutional Court in late December. It was called the Law on the Protection of Minors Against the Detrimental Effect of Public Information, and it was enacted in 2009. Like its forebears, it banned what it called the promotion of same-gender relationships to minors. It included a ban on any positive depiction of LGBTQ people in children's books and restricted the representation of LGBTQ people on public television. The small Eastern European nation's top court declared the measure unconstitutional on several grounds. The justices decided that exposing minors to information about diverse families is not automatically inappropriate. In fact, they found that the law hinders minors' development into mature, well-rounded individuals. The court said that the state has a constitutional duty to ensure harmonious and comprehensive child development, and that the restrictions are incompatible with that goal. The No Promo Homo law had also been found to be incompatible with the European Convention on Human Rights. Activists had mounted challenges against it at the European Court of Human Rights. Still, the Lithuanian Gay League says that the law created a significant chilling effect, leading to self-censorship among LGBTIQ plus individuals, organizations, and media outlets. LGL's victory statement declares, "The decision upholds the constitutional understanding that family, as a protected institution, can be formed on bases other than marriage, and emphasizes the importance of providing youth with information that reflects real social relationships and promotes respect for human rights and dignity." Same-gender sex has been legal in Lithuania since 1993, and openly gay and lesbian people can serve in the military. However, marriage equality is banned, and same-gender couples have no legal rights. A 2023 poll by the global think tank Globsec ranked Lithuania last in support for marriage equality among European Union nations.
Online gay erotic fiction is being targeted by the government of China, labeling such material as social evil. More than 50 people have been arrested since June of 2024, according to local news outlets and social media posts. Haitang Literature is a popular Taiwan-based website for adult fiction that allows writers to earn money from tips and subscriptions. One top writer on the site with the pen name Huan Shang Bian Xian was sentenced to 4.5 years in prison, according to Radio Free Asia. Writer Se Shi is serving 5.5 years behind bars, and Yi Xia was sentenced to 1 year and 5 months in prison. Details about the prosecutions of other detained writers have not yet been made public. So-called obscene material has been against the law in China since 1997. The law bans disseminating obscene electronic messages in publications, films, video and audio recordings, and images containing depictions of sexual acts. Despite these restrictions, the Danmei genre of gay male romance and sex stories has been gaining in popularity. Those clicks are significant, since 50,000 views or a profit of 50,000 yuan can mean 10 years in jail. Writers whose work earns more than 250,000 yuan can go to prison for life if they fail to pay back what amounts to about $34,000. Operators of pornographic websites can be jailed for up to 12 years. Some reports claim that individuals enjoying pornography in their own homes have also been prosecuted.
One of the men caught up in recent raids on Moscow gay night spots has died in police custody. Authorities are calling Andrei Kotov's December 29th death a suicide, noting that he was discovered covered in blood and that cuts were found on his body. In reports of the raids, Kotov was singled out as the person behind Men Travel. Kotov had testified in court that he had been beaten and tortured with electric shocks to force a confession. Vladimir Putin's legislative and judicial sycophants have been prosecuting alleged proponents of their imagined international LGBT movement as extremists. The 48-year-old travel agent was charged with creating an extremist community in which propaganda of the ideology of an association recognized as an extremist organization and banned by the court in the territory of the Russian Federation was carried out. The charges against Kotov went on to say, the defendant and active participants who supported the views and activities of the extremist through trips, public events, and the publication of images on the internet formed a false impression among citizens about the institution of marriage enshrined in the Constitution of the Russian Federation, and carried out actions aimed at undermining traditional family values. It is not unusual for those considered subversive to be found dead, supposedly by suicide, in Russian prisons. Putin's crackdown on all things queer in recent years has also included bans on gender-affirming healthcare, marriage equality, and adoption.
Finally, veterans booted from the U.S. military under anti-queer policies have won a class action lawsuit against the Defense Department. More than 35,000 former service members will get to update their discharges, removing references to their sexual orientation. Those with dishonorable discharges will be able to apply for an immediate review. Approval by a federal judge is pending. The lawsuit was originally filed by a group of LGBTQ veterans in 2023. It dramatically improves efforts by the Biden administration to streamline the process for unfairly discharged queer service members seeking redress, especially those booted under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The onus will now be on the Pentagon to initiate the upgrades. Biden issued pardons to thousands of service members convicted under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. What was once Article 125 of the code criminalized consensual sodomy. it was updated in 2013 to punish only forcible acts. Monetary damages were not sought. The settlement asks the court to approve a $350,000 payment by the Pentagon to cover the plaintiff's legal costs. Elizabeth Kristen is a senior staff attorney with Legal Aid at Work, a group that helped file the suit. She called the settlement long overdue justice to LGBTQ plus veterans who served our country with honor but were stripped of the dignity and recognition they rightfully earned due to discriminatory discharge policies. In her words, it marks a crucial step in addressing this deep-seated injustice and ensuring these veterans receive the acknowledgement and respect they have long been denied.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the 3 weeks ending January 11th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Ava Davis. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay safe.
You see, it's all clear. You are meant to be here.
I'm Stephen Fry. The great Oscar Wilde once said, "The only sin is stupidity." That is why it is imperative that we stay as informed as possible. An excellent way to do this is to listen to This Way Out, the international radio program for all our sexually diverse communities.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Mathematician Alan Turing was still somewhat of an enigma in the early days of This Way Out. The 1983 best-selling biography had not yet made his tragic story legendary. A highly acclaimed play starring Derek Jacobi closed on Broadway just a week after This Way Out's 1988 debut, but the name Turing was still not a household word. Before the dawn of the computer age that brought Alan Turing's work its rightful recognition, before the honors that were to come, on our November 23rd, 1988 program, it made perfect sense to lead into this program produced by Hugh Young and presented by Barry Epson with the question, Alan who?
Well, you might ask. And the probability that you don't know is an important part of his story. In brief, Turing invented the digital computer, if anybody did. He played a major role in preventing a German invasion of Britain. And he was persecuted, arguably to death, for being gay. Alan Turing's father, Julius, was in the Indian Civil Service, administering most of South India. But in 1907, he was on the way home on leave when he met Ethel Stoney. She had attended Cheltenham Ladies' College, whose principals, Miss Buss and Miss Beale, are still remembered in the rhyme.
Miss Buss and Miss Beale, Cupid's darts do not feel. Oh, how different from us are Miss Beale and Miss Buss.
Ethel did feel Cupid's dart, and she married Julius and returned to India with him the following year. They were on leave again when Alan was born, in Paddington. They returned to India again, and Alan was virtually brought up by other old India hands, rather stiffly and unimaginatively. In 1926, he began secondary schooling at Sherborne. Alec Waugh wrote the classic gay novel The Loom of Youth about Sherborne. His first and almost his only love affair was there with Christopher Morcombe, who was 1 year older. The relationship was probably never consummated. They shared an interest in mathematics, and Christopher gained a scholarship to Trinity College, Cambridge, while Alan failed. But in early 1930, Christopher died of tuberculosis. Alan was heartbroken. A second attempt at Trinity also failed, but he gained a scholarship to King's instead.
The sun on the meadow is summery one. The stag in the forest runs free.
In 1934, he visited Germany. He was in Hanover on June the 30th, the night of the Long Knives, when the SA was overthrown and its head, Ernst Röhm, was dragged from his lover's bed and shot as a filthy pervert. Hitler gained supreme power, and it was the end of the decadent Germany that Christopher Isherwood had celebrated. Many people around the world, not yet aware of the extent of Hitler's evil, rejoiced. That year, aged only 22, Turing was made a Fellow of King's. He worked on the question, what is the most general type of cipher or code possible? And closely related, the most general kind of machine to deal with symbols. Starting from a typewriter, he developed the idea of what is now called a Turing machine, a machine that could read and write marks on an endless paper tape, and given the proper programming, carry out any operation on symbols. In 1937, he completed his major work, Computable Numbers, which laid the basis for computers as we know them. He also concerned himself with the practicalities, experimenting with gear wheels and electrical relays, getting his hands dirty in a way not customary to Cambridge dons.
I hope, it's home the worst we go.
It became clear to the world that war was inevitable. But in October 1938, he and a friend found some escape in the new Disney film, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Alan was very taken with the scene in which the Wicked Witch dangled an apple on a string into a boiling brew of poison, muttering,
"Dip the apple in the brew, let the sleeping death seep through."
He liked to chant the couplet over and over. September 1939, and he reported the day after war was declared to the GC and CS, the Government Code and Cipher School at Bletchley Park in Buckinghamshire. Now Turing's speculations on ciphers came into their own. The German Navy and Air Force used a code known as Enigma. Unlike other codes of the day, Enigma was easy to use. Sender and receiver had identical, fairly simple machines with keyboards. They systematically changed one letter of the alphabet for another, like the simple codes we played with as children. But the Enigma machines changed the code after every letter. Obviously, if your enemy also has a machine, they can read your messages. That is, if they start at the same position. To increase the number of possible starting positions, the Germans added various refinements. But they changed their starting position only once a day. The code was solved by finding a pattern in the traffic of each day that betrayed that day's starting position. This was done mechanically, at first using punched cards carrying all possible patterns, later using a large number of machines that stepped through all possible positions in a short time. In February 1941, a German trawler was captured off Norway and the commanding officer killed before he could destroy a set of Enigma instructions. This enabled the GC and CS to read all naval traffic for that month, and by May, they were deciphering messages within a day. By June, the same day. So, Turing's work proved vital in the war in the Atlantic. In the spring of 1941, Alan proposed to another cryptanalyst, Joan Clark. He warned her he had homosexual tendencies, which was less than the truth. Eventually, he decided that it couldn't work and broke it off. He was known around the park as the Prof, even though they were all academics there. Among his eccentricities, he was unconcerned with his appearance, held his pants up with whatever came to hand, shaved with an early electric razor, leaving a 5 o'clock shadow. In the hay fever season, he wore a handkerchief over his nose. He could be abrupt, not suffering fools gladly. Turing's work on Enigma ended with a whimper rather than a bang, and he went to America to liaise with their cryptanalysts. His security rating was the highest. In America, he worked on speech encoding. The method he used is now commonplace, digital sampling, like the code on compact discs, only with mathematical operations on the digits to disguise them. The day the war ended, a friend said, "Now you can tell us everything." Turing said, "Don't be silly." And he never did. But his work on codes proved valuable at the National Physical Laboratory at Teddington when he worked on the automatic computing engine, or universal machine, what was known then as the electronic brain, and what we would call a computer. He showed that with a large, fast memory, the hardware could be very simple. There didn't need to be a special part of the computer to add or multiply, just a set of instructions in the program to use more basic instructions as often and as necessary for addition or multiplication to occur. In fact, a computer just needed to imitate adding or multiplying. If the symbols 1 plus 1 times 2 times 3 were always decoded as 12, that was enough. In the same way, the computer was imitating human thinking, and the Turing test is still used today in considering the unsolved question, can a machine think? Can a machine fool a human into thinking he or she is communicating with another human? However, because of his personality, he found it hard to communicate what was so clear to him to engineers, or even lesser mathematicians, and the bureaucracy got in the way. One of Turing's superiors cheerfully stripped the logic functions from the proposed computer, turning it into a giant calculator. The outcome is history. The early development of computers fell to the Americans, and by 1950, Turing was being written out of the history of the computer. Turing machine is sometimes written with an umlaut, as if it were German. Turing. Turing went on with his own ideas, which he called abbreviated code instructions, and we would call high-level languages. He saw, as few people did then, that a computer was not confined to numbers. One of his recreations was programming a computer to imitate that uniquely mathematical and uniquely English art form, change ringing. He wrote short stories, thinly disguised autobiography. One mentions picking up another gay man. In using that word, as in so much else, he was years ahead of his time. Late in 1951, Alan picked up Arnold Murray, 19, working class, but not rough trade exactly, vivacious and with a sense of humor. On their second meeting, Alan took him home and they spent the night together, and two more nights together. Arnold was poor, but he wouldn't accept money directly. On the 23rd of January 1952, Alan's house was burgled. Arnold said a friend, Harry, had done it. Alan, with typical innocence, went to the police and described Harry to them. And when they questioned him further about how he knew, he blurted out just about everything. Alan Matheson Turing, being a male, and Arnold Murray, being a male, were convicted of 1. Committing an act of gross indecency, plus 1. Being a party to the commission of an act of gross indecency, times 2 men, times 3 nights, a total of 12 sexual crimes, and that was enough. Turing wouldn't parade his war record, considering it irrelevant. If anything, his class counted against him. Arnold was conditionally discharged. Turing was bound over not to repeat his crime and offered the choice of prison or organotherapeutic treatment, as the local paper put it. Turing didn't want to stop work and accepted the treatment, female hormones. They made his breasts grow and made him impotent, although not desire-free. He interpreted the instruction not to repeat his crime literally, and went overseas, to Norway and Greece, for sexual contact. After a year, Alan had a doctor remove the hormone implant from his thigh. One of its effects, at least in rats, is as a cerebral depressant. The experiment wasn't repeated on many humans, so whether it produces depression in the ordinary sense is unclear. 10 months later, with no warning whatever, on June the 7th, 1954, Alan Turing dipped an apple in a brew, let the sleeping death seep through, and bit the apple. His mother refused to believe it was suicide. He had often used potassium cyanide in his experiments. One was still brewing in another room. Perhaps he arranged it this way to spare her feelings. There's no memorial, unless you count every computer in the world. One enigma remains. What would computers be like today if Alan Turing hadn't killed himself? Well, as another gay Cambridge mathematician, Ludwig Wittgenstein, said, "Wovon man nicht sprechen kann, darüber muss man schweigen." Of what we cannot speak, thereof must we be silent.
There are plenty of memorials to Alan Turing now. There's a statue of Turing sitting on a park bench holding an apple in Manchester, England's gay village of Sackville Gardens. It was financed in 2001 by gay actor Derek Jacobi, who played the ill-fated genius on stage and television in Breaking the Code. Prime Minister Gordon Brown publicly apologized in 2009 for the unfair treatment Turing received. The British Postal Service issued a stamp honoring Turing in 2012, and Queen Elizabeth II granted him a royal pardon in 2013. The biopic The Imitation Game cast Benedict Cumberbatch as the persecuted gay icon and won Graham Moore the 2015 Oscar for the Best Screenplay Adaptation. In 2021, a Bank of England 50-pound note featuring Turing went into circulation. And today, the criterion known as the Turing test is central to the conversation about artificial intelligence. Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. The Enigmatic Life of Alan Turing was presented by Barry Epson and written and produced by Hugh Young. Cat Stevens, the Pet Shop Boys, and Electric Light Orchestra performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks David Hunt of Raleigh, North Carolina, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media. Email us at info@thiswayout.org or write us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on 2XX Canberra, Australian Capital Territory, KGAY, Thousand Palms, Coachella Valley, California, WGGT, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and a wide array of community, terrestrial, and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.
Calling all SGPS members, CFRC 101.9 FM is going to referendum this year to seek continuance of its optional student fee. Help your campus radio station serve our community with news, music, arts programming, podcasts, and more. Watch your emails for ballots from the SGPS and vote yes to continue CFRC's optional fee on January 29th and 30th. Thank you for your support.
Do you prefer tea or coffee? Indie, folk, rock, electronic, I've got it all. Tune in to What's Brewing Tuesdays from 7:30 to 8 a.m. for the freshest Canadian music to pair with your morning brew. Listen in as I chat over a cup of something fresh and talk about my favorite new releases from Canadian artists that I love. Nothing like good music and good coffee to start your day, so tune in to see what's brewing. And good morning. It is 7:30 a.m. here in Kingston, Ontario. You are tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, CFRC.ca. For those of you listening in through the web, we are located in the lower level of Carruthers Hall on the beautiful Queen's campus. My name is May, and you are now listening to What's Brewing. So this week, we have some exciting picks. I say that every week, but I am very excited every morning to introduce you to new-ish in the realm of 3 months new Canadian artists that are putting out amazing music and giving you an opportunity to find maybe your next favorite artist, maybe a local artist, maybe you are going out to Calgary for a trip and they so happen to be from Calgary and they're playing a gig and you want something to do at night. Lots of benefits that you can reap from listening to this program, if not just the sheer joy of having good music to go along with your morning coffee. But to get right into it, the first song that I have for you is by Sophia Duhaime. This is a Montreal-based artist with her single released January 10th, so very new, entitled Poison. She's opened for popular acts such as Talk, if you're familiar, and it's, I would say, a rock-forward song with very bluesy elements, but still like a modern twist on that. After that, I have the Kingston-based artist The Gertrudes with their new single, also released on January 10th, entitled Elf Ears. They currently have a residency at the Toucan Bar downtown, so if you are looking for a nice night out, then check out their Instagram or any of their online platforms for more details about that. And they're also hosting a Sunday Best series at Elm Cafe from 2 to 4 p.m. with other local musicians. So yet another amazing Kingston music initiative to check out if you have the chance. But without further ado, we're going to start things off with Sophia Duhaime with Poison right here on What's Brewing CFRC 101.9 FM.
Shadow's been growing, and I've been stuck inside. We've been walking the same steps, and I fear I'm falling behind. Birds of a feather, our dreams are of the same. And now I'm to blame.
With a wave of your magic wand, you can fly where I don't belong behind your eyes. I've been fighting off bad dreams. You've been lighting up punk steam behind your eyes. And I'm in love with your elf ears, overalls and your high heels. I've been dreaming the wrong way for all these years. Still I walk through the Methodist back door every day. I close my eyes and I face the fire before anyone's awake. And still I walk through the Methodist back door every day. I close my eyes and I face the fire before anything's at stake. And there's a truck rider, a starlighter. I had a mind, ghost upon the stairs one time. And you rewrote that scene for me, shifting shape and form. Pages that are torn, floating through the fire. And I'm in love with your outfit, overalls and your high heels. I've been dreaming the wrong way for all these years. Face the fire before anyone's awake. And still I walk through the Methodist back door every day. I close my eyes and I face the fire before anything's at stake. And there's a trick rider, a starlighter, a script writer, a trick rider, a starlighter.
And welcome back. You just finished listening to The Gertrudes with Elf Ears. Before that, we had Sophia Duhaime with Poison right here on What's Brewing, CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up next, we have Capital with Your Heart Is Everywhere. This is off of their second album, Sounds Like a Place, which released late 2024, November 8th. Again, they're a Hamilton-based band, and they're also playing a show in Hamilton on January 23rd. So if you're in the area and you enjoy the song, I encourage you to check that out. Another fun thing is that they have their full visual album released on YouTube. So if you enjoy the song, then maybe check out the visuals that go with it. After that, we have Vitalia with Alone in a Crowd, released as a single on January 16th. This is a Ukrainian-Canadian artist based out of Montreal. To me, it seems like an eclectic art baroque pop sound mixed with a lot of like electronic, maybe dance elements. She is playing February 7th at Le Hemisphere Gauche in Montreal, and there is an upcoming EP which is to be announced as far as I could tell from her social media. So again, if you enjoy this song, maybe give her a follow her online somewhere, and keep an eye out for that EP coming up. But without further ado, here is Capital with Your Heart Is Everywhere on CFRC 101.9 FM.
For air, I reach for others. looking for care.
Welcome back. You just finished listening to Vitalia with Alone in a Crowd. Before that, we had Capital with Your Heart is Everywhere. And at the beginning of today's episode, we heard tracks from Sophia Duhame and the Gertrudes as well. So if you missed those, please be sure to check the archives at cfrc.ca if you want to listen to the beginning of the episode. That being said, we are at the very end of today's show. I have two more songs for you, but thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to stay tuned in all day. We have Indie Morning Wake Up Call up next, so that's very exciting. But without further ado, we'll get into the last two tracks that I have for you. So the first song is by a band called Population 2, as in two Roman numerals. This is a group out of Montreal with their new single released as of January 14th, L'été est prêt. This is more of a psych rock mixed with jazz and funk elements. And right now they're currently playing shows across the European Union, EU, Europe in general. So if you're in Europe, you can check them out. Otherwise, you might have to wait till they come back to Canada. And then finally, we're going to finish things off with Have To with Take Two off of their album Confetti, released December 20th. So about a month ago. This is a Toronto-based band with, again, more psych, rock, and a little bit of pop influence. And they're opening for the Kingston local band that you might know, Cassador, in Niagara on January 31st. So without further ado, we're going to get into things with Population and L'été est prêt right here on What's Brewing CFRC 101.9 FM. Tickets are now on sale for Side by Side, Union Gallery's annual major fundraiser. Join us on Saturday, February 8th for an afternoon of live music, artsy activities, and a lottery-style draw where everyone is a winner. Take home a one-of-a-kind artwork and support Union Gallery's nonprofit mission. Come visit the exhibition or check out the online catalog to see the 100-plus works available. Head to Union Gallery.